welcome to the Nutrition Network. Today, we are lucky enough to have Christina from Optibac going to talk to us a little bit about cholesterol, actually, which is a fascinating subject and how it relates, it seems like, to the microbiome. And I'm really excited to know a little bit more about that. But could you tell us a little bit, Christina, about you and how you got started and why you've ended up here at Optibac?
Hello, Kate. Good evening, everyone. It all began when I studied physiology as an undergraduate degree and really just got very interested in the body and how it works, and then went on to study nutritional therapy at the College of Naturopathic Medicine. And from there, I really just got very inspired about the microbiome. Lots of research was coming out. This was a good couple of years ago now. And so I started doing a lot of my own research, looking into perhaps doing a PhD in the subject, just really fascinated about its links from as early as preconception and then the process of pregnancy and the long-term outcome of a person's health based on the microbiome that they pick up in the first year of their life. And really from there, I found out about Optibac probiotics, and probiotics in general, and started trying them out myself, and then came to work at Optibac Probiotics a good year and three or four months ago now. And I work as a CAM practitioner accounts manager, which essentially means that I chat with practitioners, basically informing them about the Optibac probiotics range, as well as just anything about the microbiome that they might be interested in, so they can feel comfortable about recommending probiotics to their clients. And if for anyone who's listening in tonight, at some point I'll throw out my email, and if you're ever interested in having a chat one-to-one over the phone, Skype, or in person if you're local to London, be more than happy to schedule something so we can talk about probiotics and the microbiome, because it's so interesting.
It must help
I love
you.
Talking about it.
Yeah. I was going to say, it must help you being a NT to marry all of this up. Do you know what I mean? It must be very exciting that. When your undergraduate stuff, how did you get to be actually, how did you discover nutritional therapy? How did you make that leap?
I mean, there's always been something, I really respect Western medicine and science and the way we're progressing, and that's amazing. But there's always been sort of a missing, for me, something missing in what we cover, something that's not quite making sense in looking at the science alone. And I think that's where nutritional therapy comes into it, where you look at the individual and the history of that person and every, from their genetic history to their environmental history. It's a story, and you can't just put that to bed and put everyone in a big group and decide that one size fits all. And I think that's really where nutritional therapy really inspired me to look at the individual. And it was a very fluid movement for me.
I always say this to practitioners, which is whilst the science is obviously at the foundation of what we do, especially with the move to more towards functional medicine models, but we should never ever forget that individual also has other needs, like psychological needs and dare I say even spiritual needs, and it's actually much, much more complicated sometimes. And I think as practitioners we always need to sort of keep in mind that much more holistic picture of, obviously the science is important, that's great, and being a great clinician is important, but using, instinct is a really important part of being a great practitioner.
Yeah.
Playing it from the textbook,
Yeah, there are a lot of limitations in science and what we have the funding to research, who is funding the research, if there is funding. The apparatus and what we have to use to make that research work. It's just, there are many, many levels of limitation. And I think that comes with all of these unknowns that we can't, it's complicated. And as I said, I do really respect science, and that plays a huge part in how I understand the world and the body and nutrition. But nutritional therapy kind of fills in all of the gaps where science is kind of missing.
Yeah, and, I mean, it's not the weak.
That intuition that science don't have.
Yeah, absolutely. And actually, interestingly, when I was practicing, you know, it's almost like, you know, I have a brilliant tutor. I had a brilliant tutor, Ion, who's still brilliant. And, you know, he would get to answers by literally kind of deduction, you know, like he'd draw a massive flowchart and it would be like a deduction. I'd get to it. I mean, not to say I'm good, but I'd get to it like the same answer, but just feeling it. And that doesn't sound very, very scientific, but it's that kind of all of your experience. I mean, intuition is all of your experience in one place and accessed through the shortcut really fast. And that's really what it is. Mm. So it's actually not a non-scientific thing. It's just a different way. And I think we should keep in mind that, absolutely. I was going to say something else about practice, and I was going to say just one more before we get onto the main meat and potato, so to speak. It's about that science bias as well. So I was reading somewhere the other day that a lot of the studies they're much more likely to get published if they've got a positive outcome. So in effect, all of the papers that don't show something are just abandoned. And that in itself might be useful, if you see what I mean.
So what you get is just all these.
Yeah, just a limitation. So that, okay, the so-called science might be actually just from a bias, from basically a publication bias that goes on being repeated. So it's interesting once you start thinking, let's just see what makes common sense here as well, you know. Which brings us on to the cholesterol, because I think this is one of those things where it's a common sense thing. You know, obviously there's a big worry in the medical fraternity about cholesterol, and has this just been, you know, kind of like just a cash register? Should we be worried about it? And so let's go back and talk a little bit about cholesterol itself. So perhaps I'll hand over to you.
Okay, well, yeah, so the last time we spoke, we just spoke very vaguely about lots of probiotic things, which were, and microbiome things, and then you came to say to me, well, actually, let's focus on cholesterol and probiotics and cholesterol. So let's do that.
So here you are.
Cholesterol is, sorry, I don't know why I felt like I needed to, you know, give that little debrief just for those who didn't hear our last chat. But anyway, cholesterol is the waxy substance in our body that is a vital component of all our cell membranes, of our steroidal hormones, such as estrogen and testosterone. It's necessary in the conversion of sunlight to vitamin D in our skin, the transport of fat-soluble vitamins in and around our body, and the production of bile salts, which are very important in emulsifying the fats in our diet. And that's just naming a few of the roles of cholesterol. So it's hugely important in our body. We need it. And much of the cholesterol in our body, around 80%, is synthesized by our hepatocytes, so our liver cells, as well as our cells of our adrenal gland, also our intestinal epithelial cells. They're also producing a little bit of cholesterol, but predominantly it's the hepatocytes. And then the other 20% comes from our diet. And so when people go to the doctors and the doctors do blood work and they see that their blood cholesterol levels are quite high, and the doctor's like, oh, do you know, your blood cholesterol's, you know, borderline high. I'm tempted to put you on statins, but let's see if you can change your diet in the next 3 months. If you come back, maybe, and we'll see a difference, and then hopefully I won't have to prescribe you the statins. And that's a really, really sad position to be in for that individual, because they'll be working on that 20% that comes from the diet, so they don't really have, you know, even if they cleaned up their diet really well, they stopped eating all of the cheese, etc., the meat, they're not really going to be working on much of the problem. Well, I don't want to call cholesterol a problem, but high cholesterol can be a problem. And they'll only be working on the 20% of it. So it's kind of a losing battle for those individuals who go away. They'll come back and they may have, you know, made dietary changes, but their cholesterol won't have seen much of a dramatic change enough to for them to not go on the statin. So it's kind of a sad situation there. But anyway, that's besides the main point. So coming back to cholesterol, because cholesterol is a fat, it doesn't mix well with blood, so can't be carried in the blood without first being bound to proteins. And this is where we differentiate between good cholesterol and bad cholesterol. And once they're bound to these proteins, they can be transported around the body as lipoproteins. So there's two main types, either the healthy high-density lipoproteins, HDL, or the unhealthy low-density lipoproteins, the LDL. And the difference between them is really the ratio of fat to protein and the types of proteins in these lipoprotein molecules. So the low-density lipoproteins, known as the LDL, so the bad guys, if you like, tend to be more lipid than protein. Well, they are more lipid than protein, whereas the high-density lipoproteins, the HDL, will have the reverse, so a higher proportion of protein to fat. And the proteins these contain define the way these lipoproteins behave in the body, with the LDLs getting the bad reputation for being the ones that deposit cholesterol in our arteries that can lead to conditions such as atherosclerosis, while the HDL working to mop it up and therefore being regarded as the good cholesterol. But again, that's a bit of a sort of black and white picture of cholesterol, because there are a lot of other factors involved. So you can't just really think, you know, LDL is bad, HDL is good. It comes under the context of inflammation, and I can talk about that in a bit. But just coming back to cholesterol, so the total cholesterol level, so the TC, if you get blood back from clients that they've gone to their GP, the total cholesterol will be made up of the LDL and the HDL, and that shouldn't be more than 5 millimoles per liter. So anything above that starts to be the, you know, we're looking at someone who is potentially going to be at risk, and it's considered a less healthy position. But looking at the total cholesterol is quite limiting. You want to look at the level of LDL to HDL. The ratio is really important. And they actually do a number, which is the ratio of the total cholesterol to the LDL as a marker of how unhealthy the cholesterol levels of a person are. But generally, ideally, less than 3 millimoles per liter of blood of the LDL is deemed healthy, and over 1 millimole per liter of blood of the HDL. So more than 1 millimole of HDL and less than 3 millimole per liter of LDL would be a healthy composition, and that to be below 5 millimoles of total cholesterol. I'm sorry if this sounds a bit confusing. I'm trying to be as like very basic as possible. But all of that being said, variations away from this are not always problematic. So people can have a higher than 5 millimole level of total cholesterol. And this is because this really comes down to the level of inflammation in the body, with those who are overweight being more at risk of a cardiovascular condition compared to those who are healthy with a similar cholesterol level. So, you know, it might be 7 millimoles per liter, but this could be in a really healthy, fit individual with very low level of inflammation in their body compared to someone who has 7 millimoles of total cholesterol in their blood-free circulating cholesterol, but they're overweight and sedentary and there's lots of inflammation in their body. They're two very different trajectories of potential there. But I don't want to stray too far away. Sorry?
No, I think that's important. Do you think that the general medical profession is coming round to seeing the ratio? I mean, often still you see the figure as a total cholesterol, don't you, measurement? And
yeah,
also, I mean, I know very little about cholesterol, I have to say, so I'm incredibly rusty, but there also is many different types of the LDL. There's a sort of fluffy type of LDL, and then there's a very hard type of LDL, and I can't remember the names of them, but those little sort of beady-like LDLs are the ones that get stuck in the arteries due to inflammation.
Yeah, I mean, me as well. There's constant, like, with all subjects of science and research and health, there's loads of science being reeled out, and you know, yes, there's two types of LDL, but, like, we could spend a whole hour talking about those two types and their modes of action in the body.
So you think the medical profession are up to speed on?
I have good faith in the fact that they don't all want to just prescribe statins to everyone they see above 5 mmol/L. There are, you know, pools of, or like conspiracies about, you know, the pharmaceutical industry and their impact on GPs' prescription of certain pharmaceutical products.
Yeah,
but also not, like, be talking
Absolutely. Well, let's get on to talking about this particular product, which is called For Your Cholesterol. So how can that affect your cholesterol? I mean, you know, it seems a bit of a far-off place, the gut. Well, maybe not, you know, because it's all connected to the liver and things. So do you want to tell us a little bit about... Oh, by the way, Christina, I'm putting you on mute, so if you want me, I will be here, but sometimes it takes me a second to unmute it. So I'm going to put you on mute now while you answer that. So basically, okay. I was just saying, let's talk a bit about this particular product, because it does seem a bit like, wow, that's amazing.
Yeah, I mean, okay, so just to briefly, so Optibac Probiotics is a probiotics company, and what we do is we really focus on strain specificity. So the idea that different strains of bacteria, so I'm not talking about Acidophilus, I'm talking about the strains within Acidophilus, and there may be 1,000 different kinds of strains of Acidophilus, that would be a species of bacteria. So we look at the different strains, and we look at the research behind these strains on real people in clinical trials, and how they affect those individuals with conditions. So certain probiotics will have beneficial effects in certain individuals with conditions like high cholesterol levels compared to other probiotics, which might be really effective for helping with conditions like IBS. So what we've come up with is 12 different products in our range, 3 of which are general probiotics, so ones to just aid with digestion, immunity, energy levels, skin health, and general well-being, whereas there are others that will aid with intimate health conditions in women's urogenital tracts or different stages of life, like children and babies and pregnancy even. But anyway, well, let's talk about For Your Cholesterol. So this product has 3 strains of bacteria that have been indicated to be extremely effective at lowering your cholesterol. And by that I mean lowering the total cholesterol, but the clinical trials that I'll talk about in a bit showed that actually it lowers LDL and actually slightly raises the HDL, so the healthy cholesterol. But coming back to the liver, I mentioned around 80% of our total cholesterol is produced by our own body, primarily the liver, but also the adrenals or intestinal cells, and the reproductive organs, actually, to some extent. And there's this negative feedback system in place to monitor the synthesis of cholesterol by the liver to make sure that everything is kept in check. So too much cellular cholesterol will therefore downregulate the production of cholesterol, whereas too little will have the opposite effect. So there is a very acute or like a very tight process there in place so that cholesterol levels are maintained at a healthy level. But dysregulation obviously happens, and we see that as people age. And the precise cause of this dysregulation is unclear, but it's postulated that as we age, our general inflammation levels may rise. And with this, we have an increase in free radical production, and our renewal of hepatic cells is not as fast, which may affect our negative feedback system, leading to higher cholesterol levels. So that's sort of the context behind the product, and now we can sort of start chatting about how these specific strains contained in the product. So it's three strains of bacteria, Lactobacillus plantarum, and then the strain is Sect 7527, Sect 7528, Sect 7529. So three different strains of Lactobacillus plantarum, and they work in three distinct ways to help bring the cholesterol levels back to homeostasis for that individual. The product works in a very holistic, natural way, so it really works to that individual's healthy cholesterol level. What I mean by this is it won't work like a drug, which will, for example, statins, they block an enzymatic pathway. They won't block anything. They will only enhance natural processes in the body. So let's get on with telling you these natural processes in the body. So the first mode of action is that the bacteria in this product break down bile salt. So the liver manufactures bile salt from cholesterol and secretes them into the digestive tract via the gallbladder after a fatty meal. So you have dinner, the gallbladder is full of these bile salts, and they're released, and they're very important in emulsifying and breaking down the fats from that meal so that they can be absorbed into our system. And once these bile salts have done their work, they also are reabsorbed and taken back to the liver via the enterohepatic circulation for the whole process to be repeated, and they're stored in the gallbladder. So one of the ways that these strains work is they specifically break down some of the bile salts within the gut. So instead of the bile salts being recirculated, they're removed into the stool because their molecular structure has changed in a way that they're not recognized to be taken up back into the liver. And so this upregulation of the degradation of bile salts results in the liver receiving less recycled bile salts from the gut, and therefore must work to make more bile salts to be stored in the gallbladder for future use. And how does it do that? Well, it does that by drawing the free cholesterol from the bloodstream, because as I said earlier, cholesterol is an important component of bile salts. So normally this drawing from the bloodstream to form bile salts is very little because it's always being recycled. But with these specific probiotic strains, that turnover can be increased. So essentially in this way, we're harnessing the ability of the liver to remove cholesterol from the blood by limiting the recirculation of bile salts to the liver from the gut. Does that make sense? It's a bit of a story. So essentially,
no, I think that's the trouble with these things. They are always a bit of a story. It's not always very simple. Yeah,
everything is connected. So the natural the probiotics are like natural enhancers of the body's cholesterol regulation. It's not getting rid of cholesterol completely. It's just reducing it by changing the bile salts once they've done their work, in a way that means that they can't be recirculated. They're excreted via the stool, and that forces the liver to create new bile salts by taking up cholesterol from our blood and making the bile salts, which can then be stored in the gallbladder.
And now we have it, one mode of action of how these probiotics were actually reducing our cholesterol levels. A second way in which these probiotic strains reduce cholesterol is by binding to the dietary cholesterol. So these strains of bacteria have a particularly good ability to adhere to the intestinal surface in the terminal ileum, and that's sort of the last bit of the small intestine where it meets the large intestine. And it's here also that they bind to cholesterol and actually assimilate it into the walls of the intestinal cells, which are made up of phospholipids and proteins, but they also need cholesterol in those walls. So this one specific strain was seen to be particularly effective at doing this. It was the Lactobacillus plantarum sex 7528, just to be really precise here. So effectively, reducing the amount of cholesterol that's being absorbed into our system by incorporating it into our intestinal cells and also metabolizing it itself. So leading to a reduction of cholesterol being absorbed. But again, it's important to note here that this is only really taking place in the terminal ileum, by which point a lot of the cholesterol will have been absorbed, because I think it's absorbed earlier in the small intestine, so the upper small intestine, but there is still some cholesterol that could be potentially absorbed, but this cholesterol that reaches the terminal ileum is metabolized in a number of ways to prevent its absorption, in addition to that being absorbed in the upper small intestine. So we're not radically reducing the digestion of, and absorption of fat, but it's enhancing a natural process of keeping the levels in check. Because we don't want to, you know, cut out all of the fats that we're absorbing from our diet. That would be extremely detrimental in terms of the vitamins, the fat-soluble vitamins that wouldn't be absorbed if we did that. So just bear in mind that this product is working in our favor. We don't want to cut out all of the cholesterol. It's extremely important. And finally, and interestingly, and by no means like last for least interesting, the bacteria in the lower intestine ferment all of the fibers in our diet. Generally, all probiotics and good bacteria will ferment fibers in our diet, and they'll produce these short-chain fatty acids, such as butyric acid, acetic acid, and these are extremely important for our health. Some, you know, lots of new ways of understanding of how our microbiome is communicating with our entire body, and some of it comes down to these short-chain fatty acids. The specific one I want to talk about here is propionic acid, which has been shown to decrease cholesterol synthesis in the liver. And the strains in this product produce much higher levels of propionic acid than other strains of bacteria that you might find in other products in our range. And this is why these ones are specific for cholesterol lowering. So they produce a higher proportion of propionic acid. And this works to decrease the cholesterol synthesis in the liver by tapping into the body's negative feedback system and down-regulating the production of cholesterol by the liver. The simplest way of understanding this is to remember that a short-chain fatty acid is essentially a fat. So the propionic acid, which is produced by our bacteria, will circulate as a fat in the bloodstream, and the receptors in the liver are able to detect levels of fat in the blood, and if they perceive more fat in the form of propionic acid, they instruct the liver to down-regulate its own production of fat, and therefore LDL output from liver decreases. So it's kind of amazing.
It is incredibly amazing. Interrupt there. I mean, it's just thank like, you. Actually.
It is. I wish I could hear my audience being like, wow.
Yay.
Yeah, absolutely. Amazing.
Kind of,
I mean,
like, just showing how important the microbiome is and how possibly, you know, like, because there are, obviously, we talked about statins, which is basically blocking the mechanism, which obviously is blocking a whole lot of other beneficial reasons to have cholesterol. I mean, I think this is what we're understanding now is the, you know, for example, looking at Alzheimer's and the amyloid plaque in the brain. And the drug that basically takes away the amyloid plaque, well, the amyloid plaque is there because of injury in the brain. So it's not the amyloid plaque in itself that's the problem. It's, you know, it's obviously a mechanism, a protective mechanism. And obviously cholesterol is, in a way, very much the same kind of thing, isn't it? It's just like, okay, too much of a good thing isn't necessarily wonderful, but and the wrong type, you know, ratio is probably not good. But that just the magic of the microbiome is really striking me here, you know.
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely my favorite product. So it was really lovely that you were like, Stina, let's talk about this product next time. Because I do love talking about it, because the research is so, it's so there. Like, clinical trials, lab trials, to show that all of these things that I've been describing for the last 20 minutes, and these modes of action, they really are taking place in our body, and there's a lot of science backing that. So it's just a really lovely
product. It seems like you've got those
to,
feedback mechanisms that it's like,
yeah.
You know, because I think with there are products, obviously, and I used to use them in the early 90s kind of idea, that early 90s, sorry, yeah. No, early 2000s, about, you know, their plant steer oil products that obviously, I suppose, work in, you know, they're like, they're not, but they're like the Benecol idea, which is basically they're blocking cholesterol as opposed to,
yeah.
It very effectively lowers cholesterol. You know, people can go back to their doctor and go, yippee-doo, look at my score. But obviously, that's probably not the, that's not the aim, is it?
Yeah, you're like raising a point actually, which is, you know, when you consider what's on the market, you see things that either work on the liver, such as red yeast rice, niacin, artichoke leaf, so all at the level of the liver, or at the level of the gut, such as the insoluble fiber, the lecithin, the plant sterols and stanols. These are working at the level of the gut. But this product, I think, is so novel in that it works at both of these levels. It works
yeah.
at the level
and
of
it's
the
much
liver.
More holistic. So in effect, you're getting your own gut to do the work. You know, in other words, it's sort of, as I say, the feed, sort of like with a feedback mechanism, as opposed to sort of just randomly reducing it, if you see what I mean.
Yeah, and it's really with the natural processes of the body, like it's working with the liver. It's not, you know, changing the liver in any way so that it can't, you know, do its pathways. Like, for example, statins, which when taken, you know, you get all of those side effects like nosebleeds, headaches, nausea, and much worse, like muscle soreness. And this is down to the fact that medicine is working to block natural processes, whereas this product, as we're banging on about for ages, is working very naturally to kind of working with the body. And yeah, as I said, so I've said about trials, there are
so you've got your own trials, or are you relying on clinical trials outside your own lab?
So OptiBac Probiotics doesn't do any of the research we talk about is not done by us. It's done by the Microbiome Institute that we get our probiotics from. They do a lot of the research, but also independent researchers from universities that want to look into certain strains that might be in our range will, you know, ask if they can use some, and obviously that's great for us because then that boosts the research behind the product, and then they share their research with us, which is wonderful. But if I could just speak about one of the clinical trials, just to reiterate the potency of the product, it was a trial using just three strains at the exact same concentration as you buy them in this finished product. So that's often a limiting factor of the research, is that you see the research with, you know, bit like really high concentrations of the probiotics that you just wouldn't be able to get off the shop counter from, you know, a health food shop. So this, the trials done on this product are using that 1.2 billion, which doesn't seem like a lot, but it's enough to get the results that I'm going to talk about now. So they took 60 participants with high cholesterol, and they were split into two groups, 30 receiving the live cultures while the other 30 receiving the placebo. And measurements, and nothing else changed in their diet. Their diet was kind of monitored, and, you know, no one was going with anything novel. Everything was, you know, very monitored and standard diet. And measurements were taken at the start, at 6 weeks, and at 3 months. And what they found was that after 3 months, those in the live culture group saw an average decrease in their total cholesterol of 14%, which was statistically very significant compared to placebo. And what was even more promising was that the change in total cholesterol was mostly due to the reduction in LDL cholesterol, while the HDL cholesterol was seen to slightly increase. But also really interestingly was that those that started off with the highest level of cholesterol saw the greatest decrease. So they were split into the people with the higher cholesterol levels was kind of analyzed away from the people who had lower cholesterol levels to start with. So, and what was found was that those with high cholesterol saw a greater decrease around 17% on average compared to those who didn't have that higher cholesterol level at the start, and they saw a drop of around 9%. So this just goes to show that sort of, you know, where there is a need, there is a greater effect. So someone with a higher cholesterol level will see a more dramatic drop.
Wow. So, and presumably the work goes on. I mean, who's interested to do these trials? Is it ultimately for just university studies that they're just interested in? I mean, obviously, the microbiome has become a very trendy topic, but so who is the people who produce the probiotics, I mean, meaning in the lab, are interested, but is anybody else interested?
I mean, yeah, when you think about the statistics, like, what are the statistics these days? People suffering with cholesterol at the moment, I think the statistics say around 60% of adults have high cholesterol, and 75% of over 45-year-olds have high cholesterol, and the prevalence is growing every year. And so, you know...
Yeah, so we've actually...
What does high cholesterol mean?
Didn't we?
Yeah, yeah, essentially, high cholesterol is potentially putting yourself in a position of atherosclerosis, and that's the precursor of heart attacks and strokes, and cardiovascular disease is essentially the biggest killer in the Western world. So everyone is interested in this, and what we've got at the moment, which is statins, is kind of, you know, it's very effective, but it's also giving those side effects that we said, muscle tenderness, aching, nosebleeds, headaches, difficulty sleeping, nausea, and the list goes on. And so, you know, to look at these strains and look at the microbiome in relation to cardiovascular health is like a big thing right now, as well as, you know, mental health and generally obesity and the microbiome. There's a lot of research and a lot of people who are investing money into it. So,
So we were going to talk a little bit about inflammation, weren't we, as how it relates to cholesterol. I mean, you know, meaning, obviously, that's the big spoke in the wheel, isn't it? I mean, you know, obviously, is it possible to have kind of high cholesterol sail along, but it actually is if you didn't have high inflammation in the body, you'd be absolutely fine? Is that how it would work?
Well, yeah, research is beginning to show that you can't just, as I said earlier, look at cholesterol black and white. There's different kinds of cholesterol, different kinds of LDL. In fact, it's not just HDL and LDL. There are many different kinds. And same with lots of, you know, as an NT, you have to look at the bigger picture. And inflammation is a really important indicator of many, you know, it is the trigger essentially of many problems. It's a long, but also sort of underlying. It can be the trigger, but it can also be this underlying sort of background thing that can influence our health overall and the consequence of disease. And actually, something that I haven't mentioned about the products for your cholesterol is that it also contains, as well as the probiotics, it also contains 2 blister packs of flaxseed oil. What's recommended is to take 1 cap of the probiotic and 1 cap of the flaxseed oil. And the flaxseed oil contains alpha-linolenic acid, which down-regulates the gene expression of and essentially production of cholesterol in the liver, but also it improves the ratio of good to bad fats consumed in the diet as we absorb them, as well as reducing the overall inflammation in the body, which helps slow down plaque buildup in the arteries. Inflammation increases the buildup of plaque, so the buildup of the depositing of the LDL in the arteries. The main actual reason between you and me and all of the people listening, so it's not a big secret, is that we've added this in primarily to get the health claim on the packaging. Otherwise, no one would know that these specific strains of bacteria were indicated for bringing someone's cholesterol levels to a healthy level. There would be no indication of that on the packaging unless we put something that has got health claims on it already, like omega-3s from flaxseed oil. But that being said, all the trials on the product showing its effect used only the probiotic. So with the addition of the flaxseed oil in the product as it's taken, as we recommend to take it, as a whole, would likely be even more beneficial as the omega-3s and flaxseed oil, the ALA, alpha-linolenic acid, has been shown to help decrease levels of cholesterol.
Madness, which is you've got all the trials on the probiotic, and it's like that everybody's so behind, if you like, on the claims that then you have to sort of act at it as a sort of like, obviously it helps as well, but it's a losing battle.
With the process of getting a health claim, it's extremely difficult, especially in the EU and here.
Yeah.
I mean, in Canada, for example, they've actually gone as far as to put health claims on 2 strains of bacteria that were showing extremely beneficial effects on people suffering with depression and anxiety. So they've actually gone ahead and put health claims on those 2 strains, so they can be, recommended and, packaged with this idea that these 2 strains of bacteria are going to help with your mental health. We are so far away from that here that we don't even have health claims on probiotics in relation to people suffering symptoms of IBS. And there are such clear links with that now. It's just surprising that, there's nothing.
I think the trouble is, if you're a massive, great company who probably have spurious claims to those, benefits, you can probably just kind of pay your way to find the research that you need to kind of whitewash the product in a way. Do you know what I mean? Like some of the food manufacturers, they've just got huge, huge pockets and huge budgets. Whereas, smaller companies, that they just don't have the firepower in terms of the money to get that through, I presume.
Yeah, that's exactly it. Like, just not enough research. I mean, the research is there, and what is there you can't ignore. So, a 14% on average decrease of cholesterol levels taking this probiotic for 3 months is kind of really significant, and you just shouldn't ignore something like that. And there are lots of research, clinical trials behind this product that you can go ahead and look at through the OptiBac Probiotics website, which is extremely you know, it's a very good resource, but also the probiotics database, which you can find on the website, and that goes into a lot more detail about each of the strains and each of the products in our range, as well as all of the other products in the world that have, you know, received the most research. And that resource is growing and really intended for practitioners to kind of help them sort of decipher what strains are best for and where you can get them from.
So, you know, people worry a lot about the kind of like how many billions. I mean, is that, you know, how many billions of bacteria in the product? Is that, what do you call it, a real worry? I mean, what should we think about when we think about numbers?
Yeah, so when, I mean, it's kind of this huge myth that marketing has gone crazy on, and it's really unfortunate that people think that, you know, more is more when it comes to probiotics. That's just not the case. With this product, you only get 1.2 billion, which in when you look at other products on the shelf, you know, you might see one boasting 100 billion. And so thinking about 1.2 billion, you're like, well, what's this going to do for me? Well, I think having that mindset is really limiting, because you're kind of taking your focus away from what's important here, which is the research. And if the research says, you know, clinical trials showing that people have taken this product with a condition similar to what you're trying to deal with, they've taken it at that concentration of 1.2 billion, then it's a sure bet that if they've, you know, found it useful for them, that it's very likely that you're going to be finding it useful. So it's about looking at the strains that you need to...
Yeah, I was going to say, it seems to me like a focus problem. I mean, meaning, you know, obviously you can make a claim for billions and billions of bacteria, but obviously unless you're being quite focused on the results, then... You know, it's just like, as you say, not necessarily more is more. You know, it's just like, it's like being a targeted, like a sniper, as opposed to, I don't want to use unpleasant analogies, but you know what I mean? It's kind of like, you know, rather than just a blanket approach, you know. So can this product be taken with statins? I mean, would that be harmful? Obviously, there are people who, on the advice of their doctors, that they don't want to get off what their doctor, I mean, nor should they, without obviously going back and checking with the doctor. But what could they take it with a statin?
Yeah, this product is really safe, and the way that it works, you know, it's just promoting the body's sort of regulation of cholesterol naturally. It doesn't interfere with what the statins are doing, and you know. Obviously, we'd recommend as practitioners to work with their GPs if they're introducing something like a probiotic that's got, you know, shown to be lowering cholesterol. And I'd start with, you know, the treatment dose, which is one capsule of the probiotic and one capsule of the linseed oil in combination. Obviously, tell your doctor, and then hopefully, with time, maybe reduce the statin while maintaining your probiotic protocol. And then hopefully, eventually, just you'll be coming completely off the statin. I mean, I've got numerous anecdotes under my wing of, like, family members, friends, clients that have used this product. And, you know, they've been at that point where the doctor is like, okay, go away. Try and cut out the cheese, come back, and we'll reevaluate. We'll do some more blood tests. You know, I put this test to my grandma, and I gave her 3 months of the product. She had a blood test done at the GP. The GP told her to go away and, you know, think about what she's done. Not that helpful, to be honest, especially when you get, you know, people who are older, who are set in their ways. They're not going to cut out the cheesy pita breads, etc. So she went away. I gave her 3 months of the product. She went back to her GP after 3 months of taking the product daily like a medicine, you know, really every day. And what came back, her blood results, you know, whatever the doctor said, essentially, my grandma's really Greek, and the doctor basically said to her, well, she translated back to me, is that whatever you're doing, keep doing it. and she didn't get put on statin. So that's a, you know, personal anecdote from my family.
I don't even know.
She's just pretty old. She's like maybe 70s, late 70s, hitting her 80s.
Yeah, you know what, Christina, as you get older, late 70s is like, you know, you start, I mean, I'm only in my 50s, but, you know, you start thinking, God, 70, that's no age, you know, so it's like, you know, 90 is old, you know, that's like the 90s,
well,
70s,
I mean, I guess,
you know.
It, yeah, it comes down to the individual, and I'd say she's a pretty old, late 70-year-old,
oh,
you get what
yeah.
I mean, you know, like, you can get people who are in their late 80s, and you're like, wow, they've got more energy than me. But,
I know that one. Yeah, definitely. So what was I going to say? It's going to say, do you have to be on the product forever? And how long does it take? I mean, do you see the effect immediately, or do you have to sort of give it that 3 months?
Well, we recommend, you know, before you start the product, have your blood test done, and then start it, and then get your blood checked after 3 months. And if you've seen an effect, then keep going with it. There is nothing worse than taking medicine for the rest of your life. But there's, you know, if you've got a product which is not necessarily, you don't have to stay on it forever. You can come off it and see what happens. But if this, you know, this is a really natural product, so it's just nice to know that you can take something which is not having a negative effect in any other part of your body. If anything, it's just promoting your health. The aloe from the flaxseed oil is only going to be doing benefit. The strains of bacteria, I mean, I've defined a few mechanisms of action, but they're only going to be, you know, producing butyric acid, propionic acid, and all these short-chain fatty acids that are really important in your general well-being. So I wouldn't... There is something to be said, you know, you don't want to be on supplements, for example, vitamins for the rest of your life. But when you think of bacteria, I think of it in a completely different way. I think of it as like, you know, a food, if you like. You know, some people eat fermented foods in certain cultures. In this culture, we don't have a big fermented food, well, naturally fermented food thing going on. And also the strain specificity that's missing in terms of, you know, there are specific strains that have these specific health benefits, and you can't ensure that in your fermented food. You don't know what you're getting.
If
it's working.
Yeah, I mean, obviously, if you went to an NT, you might be working on other stuff as well. So, you know, obviously, that's all going to have an effect on how your overall health is, and obviously bringing down inflammation and all of those other things. And then, you, as you say, you assess it, don't you? So and also, you know, we talked about that sort of feedback mechanism. So, you know, so just remind me how we know that the cholesterol levels won't go too low.
Yeah, well, they won't drop too low because the liver actually detects when there is a drop in blood cholesterol, and it will produce less bile as a result. And this will happen after some months of taking for your cholesterol. So the product strain, the probiotic strains in the product will have fewer bile salts to work on, so the cholesterol can't drop too low. Does that make sense?
Yeah. No, I think perfectly. Go on, Christina. I'm interrupting you.
I was just going to reiterate what I just said. You know, the liver is the detective, you know, it's a monitor here. And so it's kind of like the probiotics and the liver are working together. You shouldn't worry about that, essentially.
Okay. So does this cost a fortune, is the next question?
I mean, you know, a cocktail in London could cost up to £15, and this product for a month costs $18.99. I don't think that's a fortune in terms of like investment into health and longevity in a healthy way. So yeah, $18.99 for the product, and we recommend 3 months.
Is that the practitioner price or the retail price?
Okay, so that's the retail price for a practitioner. If you've got a probiotic account with us as a CAM practitioner, that would be 40% off the recommended retail price. So I think that comes in at around 950.
Okay, yeah. We won't hold
so that's
it.
Pretty
you
good.
Put it just great. Around that. Yeah, yeah. Very good. Yeah.
So you get the probiotics and the alpha-linolenic acid. And then, obviously, I mean, OptiBac is working on our CAM practitioner front and what we can offer CAM practitioners in terms of, well, we offer them a 40% discount, but, I mean, I think some companies do it that, you know, they give 20% discount to their clients and they get a 20% margin, so they make 20% on the product sale. And we're working towards that, but at the moment it's quite simple in that, you know, you just get it at 40% off, which is really, pretty good.
Yeah, no, definitely. And it's just because I'm curious, you mentioned the products in Canada that uses those specific strains for mental health. Is it branded as something else that you have currently or that you can't claim? And if so, what's the name of the product?
I don't think either of those strains I was referring to are in any of our products. There is some research behind one strain, which is contained in our for everyday, which is our
right.
most general probiotic that has been linked back to mental health in certain studies, and you can look that up on our website on the probiotics database. If you just type in probiotics database into Google, it'll come up with the database. It should be the first thing on your Google search. And one of the tabs that you can filter through, because you'll get a load of different strains of bacteria and you can filter them with different conditions. And for example, mental health is one of the conditions. And then that highlights all of the strains of bacteria that have got the most research behind mental health. And one of them is in our range and it's found in for every day.
Wonderful. Well, that's a good bit of information. And Christina, it's been really lovely chatting with you today. Just before you go, just give everybody your email. I think you promised at the beginning that people wanted to get in touch.
Yeah. Okay, so it's Christina with an H, so C-H-R-I-S-T-I-N-A, Christina.Georgialu, the tricky bit. Georgialu is spelled G-E-O-R-G-A-L-L-O-U. So Christina.Georgialu@WrenLabs.com. So WrenLabs, WrenLabs.com. It's kind of a long
Fantastic.
Email.
Yeah, that's a mouthful. But, you know, and anybody who's confused can always get in touch with us, admin at the Nutrition Network, and we can
get
you in the right direction.
Get in touch with me if you'd like to trial the product. They'd be more than happy to send a trial pack. Obviously, we say 3 months, and I could only send you probably 1 month as a free trial pack, but I definitely recommend trialing it.
Well, you might do get in touch with Alison about that, Christina, and get her to do it as a competition or something, you know, as well. So that will just, you know, highlight it on the Facebook wires, you know, as well. So
get her, and
she can run it as a competition as well. So in case people don't catch this, you know, not that we've been boring. So hopefully nobody's pulled off and they've stayed right to the end. But you know how it is. So, so absolutely. We just get in touch with her and we can run something that gets to the top of the wires. So that's brilliant. Listen, thank you so much. We'll have you back.
Thank you.
Thank you.
It's lovely being back.
Yeah, absolutely.
Lovely.
Thank you. Thank you very much. And I'll speak to everybody soon. And for everybody else, have a very lovely rest of your evening. Thank you so much for tuning in. Goodbye.
Thank you for listening to our podcast. Please subscribe to be notified of upcoming episodes.